All right, welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're taking a look at a really interesting case out of Washington State, State v. Houston Sconiers. And I think this is going to be really useful for anyone who's interested in kind of where juvenile justice and constitutional law really come together.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head there. This one's a biggie if you're trying to keep up with how the law is changing when it comes to sentencing young offenders in adult court.
Yeah.
And like you said, we'll be looking at how this all connects back to the Eighth Amendment.
Yeah, big time. So the case itself, you know, revolves around the sentencing of these two teenagers, Zion Houston Sconiers and Treason Roberts. Both were involved in a robbery and assault back in, I believe it was 2012.
2012, that's right. And the Washington Supreme Court handed down their decision in 2017. A decision, might I add, with some pretty major implications. So buckle up, listener, because we're about to take a deep dive into the facts of the case, the legal issues at play, what the court ultimately decided, and why it matters in the bigger picture.
Sounds good to me. Let's set the stage. Halloween night, 2012. Houston Sconiers was 17 at the time, and Roberts was 16. They were part of a group that robbed trick-or-treaters. And we're not just talking about some harmless prank here.
Right. The sources actually detail that the group had been drinking vodka and smoking marijuana earlier in the evening. So, you know, maybe not the best judgment going on. But like you said, this wasn't some kids will be kids situation.
Definitely not. They used a silver revolver during these robberies, and they took things like candy and a cell phone. Seems pretty serious.
Pretty serious, for sure. But there's something else that's important for everyone to know. This is really what... and Roberts were charged as adults. Automatically, no less, under Washington's automatic decline statute.
What does that mean exactly? Automatic decline?
Basically, it means they were sent straight to adult court. No hearing to determine if that was the right place for them. Just, boom, adult criminal justice system. That's going to be a key point as we keep going.
Gotcha. Okay. So they're in adult court. What kind of sentences did they initially receive?
Houston Sconiers ended up with 31 years. Roberts got 26. Big numbers, right?
Huge. I can see why this case got so much attention.
A big reason for those lengthy sentences, something that's going to come super relevant later on, was mandatory firearm enhancements. Basically, any time a firearm is used in a crime, in this case, the law mandated that an additional 3 years per count be tacked onto the sentence. So it really added up.
Wait, so even if the judge didn't want to give them that much time?
That's exactly the point. The trial judge actually stated on the record that they felt handcuffed by these mandatory sentencing laws. They didn't feel like they had the ability to really consider the specifics of the situation, the ages of the defendants, and all the other factors at play. This lack of perceived judicial discretion is really what drove the appeals.
Wow, that's fascinating. I mean, even the judge felt like their hands were tied. So what were the big legal questions that the Washington Supreme Court had to tackle in this case?
Okay, two main questions. First, does the Eighth Amendment, which as you know prohibits cruel and unusual punishments, does it require courts to consider the fact that someone is a juvenile, their age and all that, as a mitigating factor when they're being sentenced in adult court?
So even if they've been charged as adults, the court still has to think about how being young might make a difference in the sentencing.
Exactly. And the second question was, building on that, do courts actually have the authority to impose sentences that are below the standard range? Can they choose to ignore those mandatory enhancements we talked about earlier, like those firearm enhancements, for example, when they're sentencing juveniles, even in adult court?
Interesting. So it's not just about recognizing that they're young, but actually having the power to make different decisions because of it.
Precisely. Now, it's important to remember, these weren't totally new questions popping up out of nowhere. They were directly connected to a bunch of really significant U.S. Supreme Court cases that dealt with juvenile sentencing, specifically Miller v. Alabama from 2012.
Ah, Miller. That rings a bell. Can you remind us about what Miller was all about?
Absolutely. So Miller was a landmark decision. The Supreme Court in that case basically said that mandatory sentences of life without parole for juveniles who are convicted of homicide, those were unconstitutional. And their reasoning was pretty clear. Children are not adults, they said. They have different levels of culpability. Their brains aren't fully developed. They have a greater capacity for change.
So basically, a one-size-fits-all approach with those harsh mandatory sentences just doesn't work when you're dealing with kids.
That's a great way to put it. And then there was Graham v. Florida from 2010. This case went even further. They said, okay, not only are mandatory life without parole sentences unconstitutional for juveniles convicted of homicide, but any life without parole sentence for a non-homicide crime committed by a juvenile, that's also unconstitutional.
Wow, so a pretty clear message there. Kids who commit crimes, even serious ones, shouldn't automatically be locked up forever with no chance of ever getting out.
Yep. The court really hammered home that idea that young people are different, they can change, they have potential for rehabilitation, and those things have to be taken into account when we're talking about punishment.
So I'm starting to see the connections here. The Washington Supreme Court in Houston Sconiers, they were basically looking at those big U.S. Supreme Court cases and asking, okay, if the Constitution protects juveniles from the absolute worst sentences, from life without parole in those situations, shouldn't those same protections also apply to sentences that might not be life without parole on paper, but realistically amount to the same thing? You know, like those 26 and 31 year sentences.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They were really grappling with that logical extension. If children are constitutionally different, like the Supreme Court said, does that difference only matter in the most extreme cases?
Mm-hmm.
Or does it mean that any time we're sentencing a young person in adult court, we have to think differently? We have to factor in their youth.
That's a big question with big implications. So what was the Washington Supreme Court's final decision?
They sided with Houston Sconiers and Roberts. Big time. They said yes to both of those big legal questions. The Eighth Amendment does require courts to consider the unique factors of youth when sentencing juveniles in adult court. And maybe even more importantly for what happens on the ground, courts have the absolute authority to go below the standard sentencing ranges and to not apply those mandatory enhancements.
Wow. That's a pretty clear statement. So their age isn't just something to maybe keep in mind. It's something the courts have to really grapple with.
You got it. The court's reasoning, their justification for this decision, was pretty straightforward. They went right back to that Eighth Amendment protection against cruel and unusual punishment. And they reaffirmed what the Supreme Court said in Miller and Graham. Children are different. They're less culpable. They're not fully mature. And treating them exactly the same as adults during sentencing, well, that can actually violate the Constitution.
So they were making it clear that just because a juvenile is tried as an adult doesn't mean we can forget that they're still a juvenile.
Right. And the court didn't just say, hey, think about their age. They provided some specific guidance on what factors judges should consider. They laid out what are commonly known as the Miller factors.
Okay, Miller factors sounds important. What are those?
Well, it starts with the juvenile's age, of course. But then there are those hallmark features of youth. You know, immaturity, the fact that they're impulsive, that they don't always fully understand the risks or the consequences of their actions.
That does make a lot of sense. Seems like pretty common sense stuff when you think about teenagers.
Right. But now it's not just common sense. It's the law.
Mm.
And the court went even further. They said you have to look at the kid's environment, their family situation, because we all know that stuff has a huge impact on how a young person develops and the choices they make.
Right. And I imagine they also looked at the specific role the juvenile played in the crime.
Yep. That's another one of the Miller factors. Were they the mastermind or were they just kind of tagging along? And another big one, the influence of peers. Peer pressure, it's a real thing. And the court recognized that it can play a huge role, especially for teenagers.
That's a good point. I feel like sometimes adults forget how powerful peer pressure can be when you're young.
Totally. And then the court said, you also got to look at the juvenile's ability to understand their rights, to deal with the police, to work with lawyers. And of course, you can't forget about their potential for rehabilitation. That's a huge one, and it has to be part of the equation.
So it's not just about punishing what they did in the past. It's about thinking about who they can become in the future.
Exactly. And the Washington Supreme Court didn't just suggest that judges should consider these Miller factors. They basically said any law or any interpretation of a law that tries to limit a judge's ability to fully consider these things when sentencing a juvenile, that's unconstitutional. They really cleared the way for judges to use their discretion.
Pretty powerful stuff. And just to make sure I'm getting this right, this decision, it doesn't just apply to situations where a juvenile might get a life sentence, right? It applies to any sentence, right?
Absolutely. Anytime a juvenile is being sentenced in adult court, the Miller factors have to be part of the conversation. It doesn't matter if it's a short sentence, a long sentence, whatever. Their youth has to be considered.
That's a big deal. Okay, so now I'm curious. Was everyone on the court in agreement with this decision? I know sometimes you have judges who agree with the outcome, but maybe not the reasoning. Was that the case here?
Yeah, there was actually a concurring opinion in this case. Justice Madsen agreed that the case should be sent back to the trial court for resentencing, but she had a slightly different take on how they got there.
So she thought the end result was correct, but maybe not the path the majority took to get there.
That's a good way to put it. So, Justice Manson argued that Washington already had a law on the books, the Sentencing Reform Act, the SRA, that already gave judges the power to consider youth as a mitigating factor. She said that the SRA, specifically the part about imposing exceptional sentences, those are sentences that go outside the normal range, already gave judges the flexibility they needed.
So her point was that the trial court messed up by not recognizing the power they already had under existing state law. They didn't need the Constitution to tell them they could consider youth because they already had that ability under the SRA.
Exactly. The majority, though, they felt it was crucial to base the decision on the Eighth Amendment. They wanted to make it clear that this wasn't just about interpreting a state law. It was about a fundamental constitutional right.
Interesting. It always amazes me how many different ways there are to look at the law and come to a conclusion. Okay, so we've talked about what the court decided and their reasoning, but what does this actually mean in the real world? What are the practical implications of Houston Sconiers?
Well, the biggest impact is on how juveniles are sentenced in Washington State. It doesn't mean prosecutors can't still ask for tough sentences.
No.
They can, and they do. But judges now have a clear directive. They have to consider the defendant's youth. And they have the legal power to go below the standard sentencing ranges and to say no to those mandatory enhancements if they think it's appropriate.
So it's a real shift in the balance of power. The judge now has more tools to make sure that a sentence is fair, considering the unique circumstances of youth.
Exactly. It's like you said earlier, it moves away from that rigid adult time for adult crime approach when we're talking about young people. The law now recognizes that kids are different, and the courts have to take that into account.
And for our listeners who are trying to make sense of all this, what's the big takeaway? What should they remember about Houston Sconiers?
It's simple. If a juvenile is being sentenced in adult court in Washington, their age, their youth, it's not just some background detail. It is a factor that the court absolutely must consider. It's required by law. And the Miller factors, those specific things we talked about earlier, those have to be part of the conversation.
So judges can't just say, well, they did the crime, so they do the time. They have to really think about how being young might have played a role and adjust the sentence accordingly.
Exactly. And the court has to explain how they considered those factors when they hand down the sentence. It's not just about doing it in their heads. It has to be clear in the record.
This case really makes you think, doesn't it? I mean, if we recognize that teenagers are different, that their brains aren't fully developed, does that logic maybe apply to young adults too? Like people in their late teens and early 20s, I mean, their brains are still developing too.
That's a huge question, and a lot of people are talking about it. Houston Sconiers specifically dealt with juveniles, people under 18. But yeah, the science tells us that brains keep developing well into a person's 20s. So where do we draw the line when it comes to the law? When does someone become fully responsible as an adult? That's something we're still figuring out as a society.
And I wonder how lawmakers are going to react to this decision. Are they going to try to pass new laws to sort of rein things in a bit? You know, try to create more specific guidelines for how judges should handle these cases?
It's definitely a possibility.
Right.
They might try to create some more specific rules about when it's okay to go outside those standard sentencing ranges. But remember, the court in Houston Sconiers was pretty clear that judges have absolute discretion. So lawmakers would have to be careful not to overstep their bounds. It's a tough balance between respecting the court's authority and trying to create some consistency in the system.
Yeah, I can see how that would be tricky. And on a practical level, how do we make sure that this decision is being implemented fairly and consistently? I mean, if judges have all this discretion, how do we avoid situations where one judge might be really lenient while another is super strict for the same kind of crime?
That's a challenge for sure. The key is going to be transparency. Judges need to clearly explain their decisions, show how they considered the Miller factors, and make sure their reasoning is sound. And of course, the appeals courts will play a big role in making sure that this discretion isn't being abused, that things are staying fair across the board.
So it sounds like State v. Houston Sconiers has really changed the game when it comes to juvenile justice in Washington State. It's made us rethink how we apply those tough adult criminal laws to people who are, well, not fully adults yet.
Absolutely. It's a great example of how the law is always evolving and how our understanding of what's fair and just, especially when it comes to young people, that's always changing too. Houston Sconiers is a reminder that we can't just blindly apply the same rules to everyone. We have to recognize that kids are different and adjust our approach accordingly.
So for our listeners out there who are following the legal world, keep this case in mind. It's a great example of how the courts are wrestling with these really complex issues about youth, crime, and what it really means to punish someone fairly.
Couldn't agree more. And as you're thinking about all this, consider this question. Houston Sconiers forces us to confront our assumptions about punishment and responsibility. When we acknowledge that a young person's brain isn't fully developed, does that change how we think about holding them accountable for their actions? It's a question with no easy answers, but it's one we all need to be thinking about.
Great point. Really something to chew on. And on that note, we'll wrap things up for today. Thanks for listening to The Deep Dive. We'll see you next time.
See you then.